Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
So we'll be looking at 2 Samuel chapter 3, the second half of that. As you remember, we're looking at what you might call the tragedy of Abner. Abner, a noble character to begin with, who falls, finds himself in a situation that makes it difficult. And this might be the third or the fourth act of Abner, the close, which again ends in a tragic story, the tragedy. But you go right back through Saul's reign. And if Abner was around today and riding a political campaign in a democracy, I think his campaign would really be centered about his loyalty to whoever side he is on. His loyalty that tracks through 40 years of Saul's reign, standing by Saul's side, made some foolish decisions later in life, and probably even through Saul's reign. But he's someone who gets it done, gets the job done, and stands by whoever's king's side. But last time we left Abner, if you remember, Abner was in Hebron with David, and they had this agreement that they made over the feast, which is in verses 20 to 21 of 2 Samuel chapter 3. When Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, "I will arise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that you may make a covenant with you, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires." So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. And David had sent Abner away. This agreement had been fulfilled. David said, "Well, if you come and bring my wife Michal here, then I will listen to what you have to say. We'll make a covenant with one another." So in all this, David is presented, in somewhat of a way as a sinner for sure. David, I think, he acts righteously in some situations, as we'll see in the coming weeks, of how he deals with Ishbosheth's murderers, how he dealt with the man who accused, who said that he murdered Saul. He does deal righteously, but he is a sinner. We understand this, but we do know that he does rule quite differently from Saul. They're quite a contrast in how they rule. Saul probably would never have been able to make a conversation or an agreement with David, but here David is willing to make an agreement with Abner. And some things you might be able to point to is David and one of his weaknesses as king is his passiveness in not being able to address things appropriately. We'll see this with his son Absalom. But he still is that shadow of Christ to be able to come. And there's this lesson that he learned from Abigail, Nabal's wife from Carmel, that we see time and time again in David's reign about almost leaving it in the hands of the Lord. And that is a good thing in some situations. As you remember, Abigail had told David, "Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you as long as you live." Remember that advice Abigail gave to David? Don't take things into your own hands, but leave them in the hands of the Lord. Don't have blood on your hands and your house. Your house will stay secure, stay for a long time. Just continue to fight the Lord's battles. But as we're told this, Abner leaving this feast, this agreement that they made, almost immediately the change in scene when Joab walks in. Just as the servants of David arrived, Samuel 3:22 says, with Joab from a raid, bringing much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he'd gone in peace. So again, we're reminded that David has sent Abner away. He's gone in peace, and almost right as Abner is leaving, Joab comes back. Joab has not been there. Now, before we get to this passage, we need to stop and remember who Joab is. He's an interesting character as we go through the book of 2 Samuel. Again, he like Abner, is in the same role as Abner. Abner was the military commander, the commander of Saul's army, and so Joab has that title. He has this official title of the commander of David's army. He serves David throughout all of his reign. We'll see him at chapter 24, the end of David's reign. But he to almost a fault of Joab, he almost does anything to the extent to be able to protect David. He's kind of someone who's kind of happy to do something and then ask for forgiveness later or deal with the consequences of it later. Just take things into his own hands. He's a man who's quite willing to be able to get his hands dirty and covered in blood so that David doesn't have to do that as well. He's willing to go and be able to take things into his own hand. That different approach from David that he learned from Abigail, just continue to fight the Lord's battles. Joab, someone is a little bit different. Now, Joab, like Abner, is related to Saul. They're related. They share their fathers or brothers. Joab is related to David. Joab is David's nephew. David's sister, Zeruiah, has three sons: Abishai, Joab, and then Ashihiel. Remember, Ashihiel was murdered by Abner. But so there's this family connections. So maybe David is unwilling to be able to call Joab out because of this family connection. Maybe he, again, just is passive in this situation. But Joab and Abner are quite similar in this situation, that they feel like they're the master chess players, the ones that make everything move and everything work. They're the ones that feel like they need to take things into their own hands to be able to do them. They feel like they're in control of everything. But really, God is just using them. God is just using them as secondary means, what he has ordained to come to pass. So we have here. But Joab does, in a sense, take things into his own hands. And generally, You look at what Joab does, and there's wisdom in what he does in a political sense, in a earthly kingdom sense. You know, Abner and Joab, as we'll see, Joab takes things into his own hands. Abner's loyalty to Saul for 40 years, plus then Ishbosheth for about 2 years, is hard to undo in a moment. So he's very doubting of what Abner does. So he takes things into his own hands. And again, it seems right in some sense to be able to agree with Joab. But in another, I think that the David, one of his weaknesses, you might say, is that he's unable to act sometimes in a sense where he acts against wrong done within his family. His family will sin, and he's passive in that. He doesn't take things out. You see, when he deals with that person who said he murdered Saul, he puts him to death. And the person who murders Ishbosheth, he puts him to death. But here Joab is somewhat not held accountable. We'll look at this coming down. But again, we'll consider Joab's words, and sometimes he is quite wise. Joab in 2 Samuel 24, he warns David about doing a census. He says, "This is quite foolish. Don't do this." And David is the one who doesn't listen to that advice. So he is somewhat helpful to David in some sense, but sometimes he's on the outside. But although he is family of David, he is a capable warrior. To be able to survive in a military commander position in this time is difficult. It's hard to be able to fake it and make it in hand-to-hand combat with swords and battles and winning fights like that. Being someone's uncle or name will get you to a certain point, a certain step, but you've got to be able to fight and to be able to win, or else you're going to be dead on a battlefield. So he's quite a capable military commander. So we do need to understand that. But let's return to this passage. And we come back, and Joab finds that David is made an agreement with Abner. And so David, he warns David of what has happened to him, and what is his concern with Abner making this agreement with David. And we see this in verses 22 to 25. Just then, the servants of David arrived in Joab for the raid, bringing much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has said, he has let him go, and he has gone in peace. Then Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you, and to know your going out and your coming in, and to know all that you are doing. So Joab comes in from fighting this battle with this big raid, and he comes in and he finds out that Abner was here. Abner, who's leading the army of Ith-bosheth, Abner, who has murdered Abishai. And here is Joab, and he finds out this information. And not only that, Abner was sent in peace, that he's made some agreement. What have you done? Why did you even have Abner here? And Joab explains his theory about why Abner is here. Abner is here to be able to find out about where you live. You know, you have a big fortress. You don't know all the weaknesses. Hezekiah comes, and what happens is when Hezekiah, he invites these people, and they come and say, well, let's have a look at all your gold and your treasure. And he's like, sure, let's go have a tour. And they come and have a tour, and they find out all the weaknesses, and they come back, and they raid Jerusalem later because they know what it's like. And this is the foolishness of Hezekiah. And before this happens to Hezekiah, Joab is saying this of Abner. That Abner has come, and you've given him a feast, and he's shown, you know, where you sleep, what you do, how you get into the gate, how many guards you have, when you eat dinner, what you eat for dinner, where you get. You've given him so much information, and you've given this all to the enemy. But he's saying that Abner is deceiving you. Ultimately, don't trust Abner. He wants to know what you're doing. He didn't come in as a friend to make an agreement. He came in as a spy. And basically, we're not told why David went from this trust of Abner. What motivated David? Was he just gracious to people? Was he using Abner to be able to find out more information? We're not told why David did this at all. Maybe that Abner comes and says, let's make a covenant, let's make an agreement. And then David says, well, you give me Michal. And this was a test. If Michal didn't come back, then it was not going to work. But if Michal was, then he assumed the Abner then passed. Who are you going to be loyal to, basically, might be the question. So he has this theory, and then we turn to Joab's revenge in verses 26 to 30. When Joab came out from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah. But David did not know about it. And when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. And there he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel his brother. Afterward, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. But may it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge, or who is leprous, or who holds a spindle, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner, because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. And so we're reminded, Joab goes to David and says, you shouldn't trust Abner. But behind all this, Joab doesn't trust Abner. Actually, Joab is, he wants revenge for his brother Asahel. And so he's not just fueled by his motive for his loyalty to David, but also revenge for his brother. Now, and there's a movie called The Princess Bride. It's one of my favorite movies. It's a comedy about this love story, and is, again, one of my favorite movies. But in this story, there's a character called Montoya, Indigo Montoya. And his main mission in life, all that he seeks to be able to do, is to find the person who killed his father. His father was killed by this six-fingered man. And he goes through, and throughout this whole movie, he basically just tells of this story, how he's going to find this man. And he practices this line, which he gets over and over again. And he says, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." And he would repeat this phrase over and over again. And you could almost imagine Joab in the same situation coming up to Abner and saying, "Hello, my name is Joab. You killed my brother. Prepare to die." And this is what fueled Joab. We're told several times this is what his motive was behind it. When he returned, Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the midst of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. And we're told several times this is what motivated the attack on Abner. Joab takes Abner's life just as Abner had taken Asahel's life. As you remember, back in the second chapter, Asahel is chasing down. He's quick like a gazelle, as you can remember, and he's chasing down Abner, and he gets closer, and Abner calls out, and he says, "Turn aside, turn aside." And he refuses to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the stomach with the butt of his spear, so that the spear came out of his back, and he fell there and died where he was. And all came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died, stood still. And again, we're told why they did this. Joab, but not only Joab, also Abishai. We're not told how Abishai is involved in this. Maybe he helped in this situation. We're not told, but Joab specifically murders Abner. And they killed Abner and put him to, because of his Asahel, the death. Abner had put Asahel to death at the Battle of Gibeon. Now, we're told that it's clearly of David, Joab's doing. Verse 26 explains that David didn't know anything about this. Again, we're several times in the Bible we're told pieces of information like this that are important, because this is how what drives it, that as we see with the people, David didn't know anything about it. And we see this when David hears of what happens. He said, "I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord in the blood of Abner, the son of Ner." Again, he says that he's guiltless. He had no part to do in this. He didn't motivate it. He didn't encourage it. He didn't command it. He didn't know about it. It was all of Joab's doing. But then what he does is he pronounces a curse upon Joab and his house, the head of Joab and upon all of his father's house. And he says, "May the house of Joab never be without one of these things." And he lists these five things that are put upon this curse of Joab's house, that there'd always be one who has discharge, one who is leprous, one who holds a spindle, one who falls by the sword, one who lacks bread. Some of these things are purity in the Levitical code are about uncleanliness. Some of these about class and money, and holding a spindle means, you know, to live in poverty almost, to fall by the sword, to lack bread. We've seen this before with Eli's house, that Eli's house will be lacking bread. And so too, Joab's house will do that as well. And just like we've seen with Saul, when Saul dies, you think David would be rejoicing. David would be celebrating. Saul, who'd chased him down, pursued him for so many times, tried to kill him. And David would be rejoicing like the little munchkins in the Wizard of Oz, that ding-dong, Saul is dead. You know, but here, again, Abner dies. And you think David's reaction would be to celebrate. Abner is the one that put Ishbosheth on the throne, who has established this fight, this big long war that had been going on between the house of Saul and the house of David. All was initiated by Abner. Now you take Abner out of the equation, well, what a celebration that would be. But again, he then turns to lament. And we see this, the king's lament, in verses 31 to 34. And then David said to Joab and all the people who were with him, tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and mourn before Abner. The king David followed the bier and buried Abner at Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner. And all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound. Your feet were not fettered. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. And all the people wept again over him. Once again, we see this lamentation of the loss of life that David has. David had sent him away in peace. And yet Joab takes things into his hands. But here we see that Abner actually gets a proper burial. Not only just a proper burial, that David is the one who leads this burial. He's the chief mourner. He's the one that mourns at the front of the line. He's the one that oversees all this. But before we look at the lament in particular, I want to just point out just a brief note that I think it is quite a drastic change. What happens in this part of 2 Samuel is that from this moment forth, David is not just known as David, but known as the king. Now, we'd known this, that right from the start in 1 Samuel chapter 16, that he's been anointed as king. But here in this passage, particular chapter 3, we see this phraseology change where David is king. Now, we've been told that David was king in Hebron in chapter 2, verse 11. But right from chapter 3, verse 17, is a drastic change where the number just increases. In chapter 3, verse 17, it is quite a pivotal moment for David. It's when Abner conferred with the elders of Israel. And when he conferred with the elders of Israel, he said, for some time past, you have been seeking David as king over you. And almost after this conversation, David is then referred to as the king. Not just the king of Hebron, but the king. Now, it could be a reference that they're just talking to him as the king of Hebron. But on various levels, I think you see that similar pattern that Saul had. Saul was anointed king. He became king over several steps, is selected by the people, and then finally becomes king. And I think you see this gradual process as well of David being king as well. After verse 17, the rate increases drastically. It's 10 times. In chapter 3, right after chapter verse 17, in 21, 23, 24, 31, 32, 33, 36, 37, 38, 39. All references now to David as the king. And prior to this, he'd only been referred to as king 3 times. And specifically, the king of Judah or the king of Hebron. But after 17, after Abner has a conversation with the elders, this rate drastically increases. But now let's look at this lament that he cries out. Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered, and one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. David's main point is that Abner did not deserve to die in this way. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. He died not in honor, but as a fool. In all this, we clearly see David's opposition to Joab's actions. He rebuked Joab. He knew nothing of it. He became the chief mourner. He led the procession. You see this lament and even the fasting that follows. He really is separating himself from Joab's actions. Now, just a brief rabbit hole. I don't want to spend too much time on this. But if Joab went to court, and again, we've spoken about this before. It's when we think of court, we've got our 21st century understanding of what court is, and I think sometimes it can be helpful, but just for this, there's not a one-to-one correlation. But if Joab was to go to court, he might be able to plead his case as vengeance underneath the law. But in Numbers 35, particularly verses 9 to 35, speaks of a process of trial for someone who has killed someone else. That it first speaks of what is called the cities of refuge. These cities of refuge is if you kill someone, then you can go to these cities of refuge. That you're safe in these about six cities. Now, Hebron is one of these cities of refuge. We find out this in Joshua chapter 20, verse 7. But then it goes into more details about not just if you murder someone, how you murder someone is very important. What type of weapon you use, iron, a stone tool, or wooden tool. Now, Joab killed Abner with the butt of a spear. So, your lawyer mind might be able to, well, it was the butt of a spear, a wooden tool. He didn't kill him with the iron head or the stone head of the spear. But it doesn't just go about what you did, but whether, you know, there's a difference between killing someone in the heat of a moment compared to waiting for someone to come so that you can kill them. Something that is contemplated. Now, Abner, killing Asahel, gave three warnings beforehand. Turn aside. Let's not fight. Let's not fight. So it wasn't that he was waiting for him to jump out. He actually did the opposite. But after that, in verses 22 to 29, we see what of a congregational decision. We're having a congregational vote on Sunday. Hopefully we never have to do anything like this. But it comes down to what you might say is a jury. The congregation then gets to hear the case and to be able to decide on it, whether they stay in the city of refuge or where they are to leave. And then it goes into the process of witnesses. What if you only have one witness? That's not enough. You need two or three witnesses to be able to say this. Okay. But what's important about this is they're worried about pollution. Now, when I say pollution, I'm not meaning carbon emissions. What I mean is blood guilt. They're worried about sin within the camp. And that's what they're mainly worried about. In Numbers 35, verse 33 to 34, "You shall not pollute the land in which you live, for blood pollutes the land. And no atonement can be made for the land for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of the one who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, the Lord, dwell in the midst of the people of Israel." Their concern is about the bloodshed, particularly that because God dwells within the land, God is holy, and then bloodshed, particularly murder, unrighteous murder, speaks of the guilt and the blood guilt. So I don't want to have a trial of Joab. I think there's a lot to be able to talk. Joab, first, before you look at Joab, you'd have to look at Abner's murder or killing of Asahel. But ultimately, in this passage, we see David's response and his reaction to the death and the bloodshed. Now, David didn't know about Joab's plan, but as soon as he did it, as soon as he found out, he separated himself and he shows that he mourns. He denounces Joab's actions by pronouncing a curse on his house. But we also see something of a different change as well here. That now David is king, but now he starts to lead his people. And his actions as king then therefore direct the people how to act. And this is what we see in the last section, the people's response in verses 34 to 39, where it says, "And your hands were not bound, and your feet were not fettered, and the one who falls of the wicked you have fallen. And all the people wept again over him, And all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was yet day. But David swore, saying, God, do so to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down. And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, as everything the king did pleased all the people. And all the people in all Israel stood that day, and it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. And the king said to his servants, do you not know that the prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I was gentle today, though anointed king. These men, the sons of Zeruiah, are more severe than I. The Lord repay the evildoer according to his wickedness. And David's actions then permeate to the people. David weeps, and then the people begin to weep. They notice even David fasting and encourage him to be able to eat some bread. But he leads them again through this mourning of process, of mourning. But the people took notice of it. It pleased them that everything the king did pleased the people. But the people also noticed David's response to this, that all the people in all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. All of these actions showed that David didn't want Abner to die this way. Even these words, what David calls Abner, he calls him a prince or a commander or, you know, used as an official military term, and also a great man. That the contrast is then put between David, the king, who is gentle, which can have negative connotations to it. Is spoken of this weak, that's faint-hearted, those who are inexperienced, compared to Joab, who are severe, which is sometimes used again as a negative sense, not just severe, but stiff-necked. They're fierce. Just as we saw in chapter 2, the battle was fierce that day. That same word there is what is used here of Joab. But ultimately what we see here is what I believe is, we'll notice this again, what I'm going to call the Abigail principle, that the Lord will repay. Right at the end, the Lord repay the evildoer according to his wickedness. This Abigail principle that says, fight the Lord's battles. Fight where God has called you to do and what he has called you to do. But don't take things into your own hands. Yes. David says of Nabal that he might die of sickness. He might die of old age. He might die in a battle. But I'm not going to kill him. I'm not going to take it into my own hands. And this is what David does too with Joab. He applies the Abigail principle, that the Lord is the one who is going to repay according to his wickedness. And Paul speaks of this in Romans chapter 12. He says that we're to live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. Again, you see David's reaction, living out Romans 12, David's reaction is much of what he's done here, trying to live at harmony with one another. He meets with Abner and goes out in peace, not to rush into things, not to be haughty, but associate with the lowly, not to be wise in your own sight. Again, that's the problem in Judges, that everyone did what was right in his own eyes. There was no king in Israel. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. And that's what the people of Israel noticed. People of Israel noticed that Joab's actions were not like the king's actions. That the people noticed and it pleased them. But he says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. And we'll see this principle come up in David's reign, whether it's passive, maybe he should have taken more action, maybe it's the right action, but he does take things into his own hands. The man who confesses of Saul's murder. In the next chapter, what the two men that murder Ishbosheth. But often we see him trying to pursue peace rather than to seek fights. David is told in 1 Samuel chapter 16 that he would one day be king over Israel. Yet he continues to trust God in difficult times. He waits for God patiently. He does not seek to make God's promises happen. But in this time, he waits for God in his timing. Now, Joab and Abner are quite similar. They quite often will take things into their own hands to be able to see what they think needs to happen in their own timing. However, in all of this, God is the one who fulfills his promises, and he does so in his timing. And for us to be able to trust in God's promises can be difficult. It might take time. It might be difficult to wait through all of it. Now, I pray we never have murderers in the church that try and make that happen. But in all, we see God's hand at work at those around him to be able to trust that God's will prevail. Not Joab's will, not Abner's will, but God's will. And I think you see that throughout 2 Samuel, but throughout the whole Bible, leading forward and pointing to Christ to come, and who does and will one day judge all who do wicked.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.